ready for your host. Here she goes.
Welcome to Diary of a Botox Bitch podcast.
Oh man, I can't get enough of your voice. Keep on talking.
Hi, I'm Dr. Botox. You're listening to my podcast, Diary of a Botox Bitch, and I'm coming to you live from downtown Los Angeles. Today's show is sponsored by DermaFace MD Skincare and Aerospace MD Skincare, 1000X Hyaluronic Acid Serum, bringing all things medical grade and aerospace collaboration live from downtown Beverly Hills on this podcast, Diary of a Botox Bitch. So they call me Dr. Botox because I'm an Irish Botox doctor and Irish reality TV star. Yes, Irish reality TV, it happened. But I'm good. I was the villain. The rest of my co-stars, or as I like to call them, my supporting cast, back across the pond, still on in therapy. And I'm here in downtown Los Angeles. Well, downtown Beverly Hills, about to go downtown Los Angeles to perform stand-up comedy. I've been on the stage a couple of times this week, all over the place. I've been in Pasadena at the Ice House, the world famous comedy store. Love it. So today we're going to talk about a little bit about comedy. There's a little bit of a demand on my TikTok and from the people back in Ireland. I think it's because there was a big story broke last weekend. I did an interview about my skincare brand. I'm doing a collaboration, which is Dr. Danielle Mark Collins, which is me, and it's with Le Dollar Skin, a brand also owned by me. So it's a more fun brand. We have Calm Down Karen Cleanser. Price point is $32 to $42, whereas DermaFace MD is more expensive. It's up at the $140, $200 mark. So we're a collaboration. I did an interview, discussed the skincare. Nothing about that came out. Now there's a lot of rumors flying around suggesting that I'm going to join the cast of an American franchise because I did do The Real Housewives of Ireland. And you know, The Real Housewives of Ireland, it's a lot like The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, but less money, like a lot less money. I also did Celebrity Big Brother in the UK, which is a lot like, well, it's a lot like Big Brother, but a lot less celebrity. You guys, you can probably tell from the cadence that I have, these are little bits and jokes that I do on stage and I'll pop in and out of those. But for the most part, I'm just going to chat here, my experience, spill the tea on all things reality TV from the shows that I did. Also, we will discuss what's happening on the ground here in Beverly Hills. There's a lot of shows made here. You could turn any corner at any given time. You could bump into Vanderpump Rules or filming. The Oppenheim Group could be filming Selling Sunset, or as I like to call it, Hookers and Heels or Hoochie Mamas in the Hollywood Hills. At any given point in time in this town. And also, Lisa Vanderpump, your sour pink car has been abandoned in the West Hollywood car park for about 6 months now. Would you ever go and pick it up? Also discussing the fact that last week we had Thanksgiving here, as I call it, Turkey Thursday. I volunteered, like the good Samaritan that I am, to help feed people who are unhoused. That's what I think we have to say these days, because I'm not sure what this week is. It's like, I was trying to tell a joke the other day involving attendant, and I had so much anxiety because you have to say flight attendant, you can't say a steward or stewardess. So again, I was just helping the less fortunate. It was such an opportunity for me to be of service. I won't lie, when I pulled up outside the venue, I was like, oh goodness, this is a lot. Also, I had invited my friend to come and help, and I found myself there on my own. But when I went in, there was loads of comedians and people I knew and some great, good-hearted people. So it was just such a lovely thing to, in between my three Thanksgiving dinners, I was able to go and be of service for a couple of hours on, as I'm calling it, Turkey Thursday. Because Thanksgiving to me is funny. I grew up in Ireland. Yes, I grew up in the mean streets of South Central Dublin 4, which is basically Irish Beverly Hills, or as I like to call it, Dublin 90210. And again, all sorts of opportunities for sure. Did I make the most of it? Hell yeah. Big time. But at the same time, it's nice to be of service. And it was funny because I was getting some pumpkin pie for somebody and they were like, I don't want pumpkin pie, I want water. I was like, no problem, sir. Let me get you water now. And it was just amusing because some of the other comedians were like, that person has no idea, you know, of any of the TV credits I've back from across the pond. And nor should they. It doesn't matter because we are there to be of service. But it was a really wonderful thing to do in between my Thanksgiving dinners at the various different places. And then I went to see my friend afterwards. My friend, actually, fabulous individual, she decided to surprise me and flew into LAX. And would you believe it? Guess who else flew into LAX on Wednesday before Thanksgiving? Morgan Wade, singer who's rumored to be dating Kyle Richards. I love Kyle, and I feel like I'm devastated with Kyle and Maurizio as if their marriage is actually going through a rough patch. It seems to be not for a storyline. I think if you were here and you knew the family or knew of the family, Maurizio has his Buying Beverly Hills show. They've just filmed season 2. The reason I know that is because a certain person was in talks to do a little cameo, and it was funny because they were wrapping up and they were just doing all the cutaways and the final B-roll, and we got there a little bit too late, but I was going to be like, no pickleball, no purchase, and just be ridiculous on that show. But here's the deal. Maurizio then also went on to do Dancing with the Stars. And then obviously he had his hand on the hip of his dancing partner while explaining that they weren't throwing in the towel in their marriage. It was just awkward. It was weird. Kyle then went to BravoCon. I was at BravoCon. I saw Andy Cohen. He's so, I don't know, his hair is very fabulous. And again, at BravoCon, four weeks before BravoCon, she had been stating very clearly that it was a case of she had instigated the separation. And then at BravoCon, she actually broke down and was crying, saying she wants to make it work out. So I don't know what's going on, but it's definitely not a storyline. So keep them in your prayers and the family and their daughters. They're a very good family. Also, the show Buying Beverly Hills is a more upmarket version of Selling Sunset, or as I like to call it, Hookers and Heels, or, you know, Hoochie Mamas in the Hollywood Hills, whatever. It's definitely a more upmarket, but I also feel like he's slightly diluted his brand. And not that I can talk either, but he is slightly, Maurizio has slightly diluted his brand because he's now done Dancing with the Stars and he needs to go back to being a badass realtor. There was also some stories about a purchase of a house. You can Google it and Google Maurizio and the agency and purchase of a house off the books or something. I don't quite know and I don't want to comment, but that was settled out of court. But he needs to go back to being a badass realtor. He's diluting his brand. And like I said, I can't talk because I had the biggest Botox clinic. Then I did The Real Housewives of Ireland, which was great for business. I did Big Brother, which is also good for business. But when I did Celebrity Big Brother in the UK, I was gone for nearly 6 weeks, which was weird. I don't know if it was worth it for the money that you get paid. And again, you have to be careful to not buy into the media frenzy yourself. Keep the eye on the ball. And I think at this point in time, I'm pretty geared up. I feel like by my hard work in comedy, I first did comedy 10 years ago. I dipped in and out of it. Then I was back doing it with a vengeance before the pandemic. Then I dipped in and out of it. Who wanted to do garden shows? I mean, please. The last garden show I was at was a garden show of, it was George Michael singing at the 2012 Olympics, and they had a big TV in the back garden, and that was a garden show worth going to, but it was the middle of summer in Hampstead Heath in London. I didn't want to be sitting in garden comedy shows. It's like, I don't really like, there's certain venues that I like, certain venues that I don't like, or certain venues that are great for comedy and certain venues, like i.e. a fucking comedy club, not a garden or a car park. But here's the deal. I'm going to talk a little bit about now for the next episode or two, a little bit about my journey, because there may be people who are wanting to get into comedy and want to know how best to approach it. So I did it about 10 years ago before I did Celebrity Big Brother. I took a course with Jill Edwards in Brighton at Comedia Club. I did 3 minutes and I remember thinking, oh my God, how am I going to do 3 minutes? It was a little side club and a really good comic. He's since become very famous. Rangan Rikkanathan. I can't say, I'm slightly dyslexic, so I'm sorry. I'm not even going to try and say it again. Anyway, he's very funny. He came over and he did a big show here about filling the theatre, the Greek theatre here in LA. And it was, he did a reality show following him around. He's very, very funny anyway. Rangan Rikkanathan. Oh my goodness, I'm just going to get, Jill is going to kill me. But anyway, I did a course with her. It was a 5-day busman's holiday course. And I remember just being so scared. The reason I wanted to do comedy was I'm actually terrified of, or I used to be terrified of public speaking. I don't know why. I think it was because I paid, this is going to get more deep. I played the Virgin Mary when I was in senior infants, which is like kindergarten. And I forgot my line while I was bringing baby Jesus in. I can't even remember. Anyway, the point being, then later on again, I was doing a lot of radio presenting and I got booked to host a show. And it's so funny looking back, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I was emceeing a charity show and I wrote a few lines and I remember looking at the lines before I went up to do each intro and then forgetting them when I got on stage, and it was just awful. To say I bombed was an understatement. So I think those two combined had me very nervous of public speaking. Not nervous of going on a talk show and talking, because sure, I could talk for Ireland. That's not an issue. Even my family members joke that if I was ever kidnapped and they asked for a ransom, you know, within 24 hours, they'd be like, look, don't worry about the money, just would you come and get her? And if they were to leave me 48 to 72 hours, the kidnappers would be like, do you know what? We'll actually pay you to take her back. So the talking was never a problem. So if I was being interviewed by a late night host or a Saturday show or a morning breakfast show promoting The Real Housewives of Dublin or the, you know, Celebrity Big Brother or any other TV shows. I also did a show called 50 Plastic Surgery Shockers, which is like the UK version of Botched, or as I like to call it, 50 Fucked Up Faces. The producers loved me. But if I was ever doing anything like that, where there was a lead asking the questions, that was fine, or teleprompter, no problem. But I did have a real problem with public speaking. I just, you know, I remember even in season two, I think, or maybe it was season three of Housewives, I had to give out a gift voucher for my clinic. We were just giving a €500 voucher for skincare, and I can't remember anyway, but the point is I had to get up and just announce the winner, and I remember my legs shaking from underneath me. Now, no one would have known this at the time. This is going back 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. No one would have known this. So I thought the best way to get over public speaking fear is to do stand-up comedy. Also, when I came to America, I had dipped into it, then I dipped out of it. Then when I came to America, I realized very quickly I had an accent, and if I wanted to be on a sitcom, I did all the training at Groundlings. I did hours, thousands of hours training with Margie Haber for drama, which never went very well because I would get up to do a scene and everyone would be laughing. I'm like, what's so funny? I'm about to read for the part of the auntie dragging her five nieces out of the burning house and they'd all be on the floor dying laughing. And I was like, what? So it became very quickly apparent to me that probably it would be a half hour multicam or single cam sitcom. But then it also became apparent to me after about spending about $5,000 on trying to get an American accent that I would never be able to get an American accent. So I thought, well, do you know what? If they want an American accent, they can just fucking cast an American. Also, just to give you a heads up, Australians do great American accents, and it's because their masseter is set, their muscle of the jaw is set in a certain way, the same way as the Americans. That's why Americans can't do good Irish accents, and that's why Irish often can't do a great American accent, or maybe it's just me. So after about $5,000 being spent, I realised very quickly I wasn't going to do American accent. I also realised they weren't going to cast me for the part of a half hour. And again, this is all before the pandemic. They weren't going to add before SAG strikes and before WGA strikes. And literally, we've had a nightmare 3.5, 4 years in this industry. But I realised very quickly they weren't going to cast me, you know, as Irish Becky. So I was like, OK, I'm going to do stand-up comedy. And then if I'm funny or someone sees me, they'll cast me. Now what's happened is I'm completely addicted to stand-up comedy, obsessively. So I don't get nervous before I go on. I'm like always dying to chomp at the bit. And even 6 or 7 months ago, I was thinking to myself, how do people host these shows? Because if you're hosting, you've got to do your 10 minutes at the top or your 15 minutes. And in between, you've got to keep it moving and manage everyone. And I was like, oh my goodness, I could never do that. Now, for January, my goal is to start hosting and emceeing shows all over town. And it's just funny. It's just, yeah, I did an interview last week and they were saying, are you married? I love the fact that they're always like, oh, it's so fucking boring. It's 2023. And it's like, they talk about all your successes and then the final icing on the cake is, and are you in love? Do you have a man in your life? You know, and I mean, that's fine. It's a valid question. But also, I don't mean this to sound in a bad way. How am I going to say this? But here's the deal. It's just so funny that they think that for your life to be really complete, it would be, you know, you've had successful brands, you've sold them, you've moved to LA, you're doing stand-up comedy. I'm doing stand-up comedy. Tonight I'm going on stage at the Comedy Store in Sunset. I was there on Monday night. That's twice this week. That's pretty fucking phenomenal, if you ask me. I only landed into the LA comedy scene really properly this year. I had been doing stuff in San Diego and whatever. But that to me is the icing on the cake. So why they then have to say, or a journalist will say, are you married or do you have love? It's so boring. How about celebrating the fact that I don't need a man? I've never needed a man. And quite frankly, unless there's certain specifics that he could bring to the table. Like, for example, if he had a G650 private jet, extended range. I mean, that's something that could add to my life for sure. But other than that, I'm just like, boring that they always kind of calibrate. Also, recently, somebody got into it with me. It was really funny. Just a dumbass. And they were messaging back and forth. And I was just kind of, I don't know why I even bothered. But their final comeback was like, no wonder you're nearly 40 and not married. And I'm like, bitch, thank you. That is the biggest fucking compliment because I've never had to get married. I doubt very much that I would enjoy sharing my bedroom, my bed, even my house, to be quite honest with you. I don't want to share with anyone. And also, apparently, if you're married or in a relationship, you have to do something. What's that word? It's called compromise, I believe. This is the fucking Danielle show 24/7, 7 days a week. Unless someone's going to slide in into my regime, I'm NFI, not fucking interested. So guys, we are on episode 8 and there is a thread running through my life here. It's working for me in a good way. I keep bumping into people, famous people. And a lot of the time I don't know who they are, which is not, that's not even a bad thing either. I'm going to talk about, so in the last episode, I talked about bumping into Ryan Reynolds. Of course, I knew who he was because he's just so lovely. I also talked about dinner in George Michael's house. And these are all people that I know. But when you move to a different country, sometimes people are so big here that they don't even need to bother getting known in Ireland or the UK. And one of those people is Marc Maron. He's a very well-known comedian over here. He has a huge podcast, a huge following. He interviewed the president of America in his garage. And he's just very, very well-known. He's had about 17 million Netflix special. Anyway, long story short, about 6 months ago, I'm sitting at the back of the OR room in the Comedy Store. I haven't even told this to Mark either, which is kind of embarrassing. I probably need to tell him. I gave him a birthday card for his birthday. And I'd say he doesn't know what to think of me. He was going away on tour and he needed someone to mind his cats. And I was trying to get my neighbor. She had just finished working on her job and was in between jobs and is good with animals. And I thought, well, this is two birds with the one stone. I'll try and, you know, hook her up with a little part-time gig and then he can go on tour, because obviously it's important comedians get to go on tour, but they don't like leaving their animals. And so I gave him her contact details and I had given him a birthday card. So I'd say, but the reason I did this is because basically we shared a moment. I'll tell you about this. So 6 months ago, I'm in the OR room and there's a show on every weekend there and the producer is very, very nice. He's just a fab producer, just one of my favorite producers. And so I was at the back of the OR room and they were bringing the different comics up. And again, these are comics who are not necessarily doing it 10 years, they're maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years in. So it was a good move for me to attend and be seen and to show face and to meet the producer and just get the lay of the land. So basically, I'm sitting at the back of the OR room, which is a very famous room, incredibly famous room. And it's the real, it's the apocalypse. You know, either you do very well on that stage or you do very not well. And so in this show, they leave on the baby lights at the side. So they have all the famous names, like Robbie Williams is up in lights, and they leave the lights on Mitzi Shore, the original lady who owned and ran the Comedy Store, and a various different other big names. They have them in lights around. So for this show, it's a more, I guess it's for more of the comics coming up than the people who are on the main stage or anything like that. So they leave the lights on. So it's kind of a nice setup. So I thought this is a good show for me to join and get into the roster for this. So I'm sitting at the back, they bring up the different comics, and in comes some kind of guy who looks like a retired rock star, if that makes sense. He kind of just looks like a cool dude, and he's drinking what I later learned to be a can of Liquid Death, which is basically water. But of course, I just arrived in America. I don't know what half of anything is, don't know who half of anyone is. And I was there, jeepers, your man is at the back of the OR drinking a can of Irish cider. My God. And I also was like, he looks like a rock star. Anyway, the next thing is the producer goes over and starts talking to him and is asking him, does he want to go up on stage? And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is like crazy. I'm sitting here, how am I going to get up on stage when this guy who looks like a rock star turned kind of, you know, maybe he's starting his comedy career, and there he is with a can of cider. Jesus Christ, on a bicycle. I was like, God almighty, how am I going to even deal with this? This guy has come in and he's sitting at the back. Because it was almost like he had come in off the street in a way, because he kind of came out of nowhere and he'd no ticket. And not that I can talk either, because I've never bought a ticket in my life, and I'd come in the back way. But I just didn't see where this guy had come from. It turns out, this is so embarrassing, and I probably have to say this to Marc Maron myself, because it's kind of cute, but it's also kind of really fucking embarrassing. So basically, long story short, I actually sat there and was listening to this conversation, and the guy was sitting there with his can of Liquid Death. The producer was kind of cajoling him, did he want to go up? And I'm thinking, why does this guy not want to take the stage? This is crazy. I later learned that he was actually trying to combine his 25-minute set on the main stage on a Friday night in the World Famous Comedy Store, which is as big as it gets. But of course, I didn't know who he was because I'm a dumbass. So I just was looking at this guy who looked like a retired rock star who was trying to do a little bit of comedy. And I'm looking at him with his can of cider, which was actually water, so totally legitimate. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with him? He doesn't want to go up. He's humming and hawing. So anyway, the producer's talking to him, and then the guy kind of agrees. He goes, okay, you know what? I'll go up. So I literally, thank God I didn't, but I was about to go lean into him and say, now, thank God I didn't, because this is a real Irish thing to do, an Irish woman thing to do. Thankfully, he got up to go up on stage before I could do this, but I was literally about to tap him and be like, sure, do you know what? Go on up and just do your best. Just go up there, be yourself, and just have a good time. And you know what? Don't worry about what anyone thinks. If you get a laugh, that's a bonus. Just be yourself up there. Thankfully, they called him up, so I didn't get to say that. And when they called him up, they announced his name was Marc Maron. So I looked down at my phone, I Googled him. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, he's about 17 million specials. Mortified. Obviously, he's hilarious. The reason he was humming and hawing was not because he was nervous. It was because he was on the main stage in about 10 minutes and he was doing a 25-minute set, which is as big as it gets. So he comes down off stage and I was just like, oh my gosh. Anyway, he goes to me, are you Irish? I said, yes. And we went outside and we were chit-chatting. And it turns out he loves hiking in Howth. So when Marc Maron next goes back to Ireland, we'll definitely have him on the podcast and talk about all things Ireland. He loves Ireland. He stays in a hotel just off Grafton Street. I said, look, that's not the greatest hotel. Probably best we move you to the Merrion. I gave someone a text. We were chatting about everything. He likes hiking. He was saying Howth. And I was like, where is Howth? And I was like, oh, Howth. He also loves eating in Cornucopia. And I was dying laughing because when I was a student in Trinity College, Irish Ivy League, doing my DDS and then my master's in aesthetic medicine, I used to go up to Cornucopia, and he's vegan actually, so he loves that restaurant. We were talking about all things Ireland and whatnot. And then I would see him, and then on a Friday night, he always is humming and hawing with his time on stage. And sometimes he'll look at you and I'll go, oh, I don't think you have time. And then, like I said, it was his birthday. I gave him a little birthday card because I like him. And I always feel like my thing is with the big comics over here is we get to see them every night. Yes, they perform for audience members, but as a comic going up through the ranks and working hard, and it's an apprenticeship in this town, so you earn your stripes, and I get to watch the best of the best, the greatest of the greatest. And if you guys watch, there's a phenomenal docuseries about the Comedy Store on Sunset. It's a 5-part series. Watch it. It's incredible. It used to be run by the mob, then Mitzi Shore took it over. And it was so funny because in that I would see there was people like Bobby Lee being interviewed. And I was like, I thought Bobby was about 30 years old. Bobby's actually 52 years old. He's there every Friday night at the Comedy Store. He's there 5 nights a week. Mark Maron obviously was featured in that documentary. Whitney Cummins, Annie Letterman, like all the great comics that are working comics there who are so kind to all of us, who give us a fist pump, give us a hug. You know, even people like Tiffany Haddish. Tiffany will give you a hug. The amount of times I've got a hug of Tiffany Haddish, she's like the nicest person. So it's quite incredible, this apprenticeship that we go through. And again, interestingly enough, I was also recently at Ice House in Pasadena, and this is kind of embarrassing. This is even more embarrassing. The owner of the Ice House in Pasadena is also the owners of Lakers, and I was wearing a Lakers jacket. And I do this bit in stand-up comedy where I go, I'm a big Lakers fan, because it's ridiculous, because obviously I'm Irish. I go, I don't understand any of the rules of the game of baseball, because I can also, it's a good joke to ascertain if the audience are awake, because if someone laughs after, if the audience laughs after 2 seconds, I'm like, okay, they are awake and they are an intelligent audience. Great, we can go and tell those specific jokes that are for the awake and intelligent audience members. If they're a bit slow and it's 4 seconds, you're like, oh, okay, they're a little bit awake, but they're also not, you know, not the quickest audience. So let's just keep it a little bit simple, keep it fun and light for the people eating the buffalo wings in the back seats and the cheap seats, which is fine too. And then also, if they're not laughing after about 6 seconds, I'm like, okay, the audience is basically drunk, which is going to be a nightmare, but it is what it is. So anyway, there I was, I have this bit and I'm out at the Ice House in Pasadena. I watch a show and then afterwards I'm in the bar. And I'm introduced to this very nice guy who actually had opened the doors at the end of the previous show. So I said, oh, this is very nice. This guy obviously works here. He's obviously a member of the staff and he's so friendly. And we were chatting away and I had my Lakers jacket on. And he said, oh, I like your Lakers jacket. I said, oh, thanks very much. And again, same situation. Big dog in this town, big family. Jeannie Buss, his sister, also came up through the same Pretty Funny Women alumni that I did, and with Lisa Sunstead. And so I was like, when I look back at this, this is another complete cringe moment. Anyway, long story short, Johnny Buss is there saying to me, so are you a Lakers fan or what's the deal? And I said, oh, listen, I'm a huge Lakers fan. Don't understand any of the rules of the game of baseball. Thinking I'm hilarious. And he's laughing in fairness because it is a good joke. And everyone else is also laughing. I'm like, it's not that funny. So then I said, there's actual viral footage of me sitting courtside asking, why does LeBron get 3 points and everybody else gets 2? And he was laughing. And again, everyone else was laughing harder. And I was like, it's not, it's a good joke, but it's not that funny. Obviously, the joke was on me because there was me with my Irish accent, my Lakers jacket, and telling Johnny Buss bits about the Lakers. It was just beyond ridiculous. He's now my LinkedIn friend. He's an absolute gentleman. He's a sweetheart. And I've done the legendary room, that same room I've done now 3 or 4 times in the last 5 or 6 weeks. It's funny, this town is so huge, but yet it's so small in so many ways. And it's such a blessing to come up through the ranks and earn your stripes. And again, from day one, I just rolled up my sleeves. I didn't want any special passes. I definitely work. I think I'm probably one of the hardest working people I know. And I know everyone works hard, but I work efficiently as well. And then I have my skincare brands and I'm juggling a lot. And then also there are rumors that I'm joining an American franchise over here. All I can say is that there is a certain show that probably they all need a big kick up their ass, because no Rinna, no ratings. That's it from me, Dr. Botox, Dr. Danielle Mark Collins, coming to you live from downtown Beverly Hills on my podcast, Diary of a Botox Bitch. Next episode, we will talk about all things reality TV, spilling the tea, skincare. And again, a huge thank you today to our sponsor, Dermaface MD and AerospaceMD.com. If you use Botox Bitch 25, you will get 25% off at checkout. And at the moment, there are currently 40% off markdown prices on certain hyaluronic serum from the Dermaface MD Core White Collection. Thank you, guys. That's it from me for this episode. Dr. Botox, Diary of a Botox Bitch.
I know it's exactly what you've been waiting for, so let's do this.
Welcome to the segment we call Botox. Let's talk all things Botox, filler, and skincare.